Individual contributors
this paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
Another big, big week in technology. Of course, the law agencies have arrested the Black Shades cyber gang. And we've been reading about how Cisco routers have been bugged by the NSA. This is another one of those Snowden leaks that keep dribbling out. And Google has actually hired a philosopher to help them decide who is going to be forgotten. But of course, they're only going to be forgetful in Europe.
Of course,
everything can be remembered in the U.S.
In the United States.
And of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
Giant
mailbag.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Yes, we got an email from Lois in Kansas. Dear Tech Talk, last week you talked about changing the Wi-Fi channel so it would be different than the neighbor's channel. How can I tell what channel the neighbors are operating their Wi-Fi on? Thanks, Lois in Kansas. Well, Lois, that's a very good question. I use the program NetStumbler. It's a shareware program. That's actually how I do all my war driving. You can download it free from netstumbler.com. I use this program for all the war driving stuff. I actually had a Wi-Fi card that I plugged into my last laptop. Now I have a new it had a slot that I could plug it in, but my new laptop doesn't have such a slot. And I've got a Sony Vaio, and so I downloaded NetStumbler just to check it out. It doesn't work on my current laptop because it doesn't support the particular Wi-Fi unit that I have. So I had to purchase a Wi-Fi dongle, which would plug into a USB port in order to get a cat-compatible receiver. I should get that in a couple of weeks, and I'll test it out. And so I thought I might be able to get an app on my iPhone that could do this thing. There are some hotspot apps, but they don't locate the particular channel. But that was a very good question. I'll have a better answer for that in a few days. By the way, the hotspot that I downloaded is quite powerful. I think the unit on my laptop has a radio that's about 50 to 70 milliwatts. And this unit that I'm getting is 2,000 milliwatts.
Wow.
So it is like a really powerful one, which means I'm going to have a very long range. I also ordered a screw-on 10 dB antenna. So I'm getting set up for more war driving with my current laptop. So thanks for that email, Lois, so I can get back into the game with my war driving. We got an email from Lynn in Ohio. Oh, this Ohio bunch
more
is sending
Ohio
more
people.
Ohio stuff. Dear Tech Talk, I returned to the same coffee shop where I was a few months ago, and I noticed that my email had been hijacked or hacked. Now, this time I'm using my phone. Last time when I noticed the hack, I was using my computer and doing email over an open internet, free Wi-Fi network. Do you think that this could be a source of a problem or just a coincidence? I'm afraid to do email here now. My whole family loves your show. Thanks, Lynn in Ohio. Well, your connection could have been interpreted, but it does not, you know, and that's probably what happened if your password was not encrypted. Now, it can be, but you can set up your email so it's safe to receive email at a coffee shop or another location, even on an unsecured open Wi-Fi network. I do it all the time, but I follow some very specific practices. Now, first of all, whenever I'm at an open Wi-Fi network, I turn on the firewall to my laptop. Because you see, if you don't turn on the firewall of the laptop, other people at the hotspot might be able to see what's on your hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
So they could. There's a firewall with the Wi-Fi router, but then other people at the coffee shop could see what you've got going on your desktop. So your firewall will keep them out of your desktop. I also secure the my desktop email program, and I make certain to configure them so they use SSL or secure socket layer. Like if you use Gmail, for instance, you can go to the configuration and you can request that it do SSL all the time, so that not only is your password secured, but also the email itself is secured. That's extremely important. So you always want to configure email. And I never do anything unless I can secure that connection entirely using secure socket layer, which means people can't see the password. They can't see what I've got going on. You see, if you only secure the password and then you set up a session which is not secure, it's possible for someone to watch that session and hijack your account because you're already logged on, and they can watch the traffic, and they can basically do a man-in-the-middle attack on you, and they can hijack your account. And there are programs that are set up to do that. I could turn on a program like that at a coffee shop, and I could hijack people's, say, Facebook accounts if they're not encrypted all the time. So if I cannot ensure that it's SSL encrypted all the time, I just don't use it at all.
Okay.
Now, so you want to make certain that it's that way all the way. Now, the other thing that I do, I should say one other thing. I do no banking.
Yeah.
I do no banking at all when I'm at the coffee shop. Anything which is really, really critical, I just don't do. And so that is critical. Now I also have virtual private network. I signed up for VPN. It allows me to have up to 5 devices on it, and I pay about $80 a year. So when I've got my cell phone, I can just simply activate the VPN, and it logs on to a VPN server, and everything's fully encrypted. So that way, with the VPN service, I actually have no issues with anything, because I'm running an encrypted pipe to the VPN, and nobody, even if I've got unencrypted email, people can't see what's going on. So I use that VPN whenever I'm at airports, whether I'm traveling. I just set up the VPN. I've got the same VPN software on my laptop, I've got it on my iPhone, I've got it on my iPad. So, $180 a year covers it. And so that would be, I think, recommended if you have to do banking online, I would really do it with a VPN. The other thing that I use my VPN for is when I'm traveling overseas. Of course, they won't let me watch Netflix movies because it's only allowed in the U.S. So I log on to the VPN in the U.S., and then I go to Netflix, and they say, hey, these guys are in the United States, and then I can stream my Netflix movie using the VPN. So got nothing to do with security, but it's just a way to get access to my streaming media. That was a great question, and we certainly did enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that – then we've got one more.
Yeah.
One more email. Yes, I was I failed to actually – we got this email from Doug. Dear Tech Talk, I'm in high school, and I'm trying to decide what I should go into. Should I go into computer science? Should I go into business? What's the prognosis for computer science? What do you recommend? Well, Doug, that's a very good question. You have to do something that you like. The key is you have to find what you enjoy, and if you enjoy working with data, you enjoy abstract things, and computer science could be just perfect for you, but you have to make certain that this is something that you would thoroughly enjoy. I would recommend that you go to one of these free coding websites where they have coding lessons on board, just to kind of test it out, see if you like to code, see whether you enjoy it, as kind of a precursor as to whether you get into the field of computer science overall. But if you decide to go into computer science, you're not going to be alone, because computer science classes and programs are booming at universities across the UA. According to data presented at the recent Summit for Women in IT by Ed Lazowska,
okay,
the Bill and Melinda Gates Chair at the Computer Science and Engineering Department at the University of Washington, computer science enrollments are up at all the institutions across the UA and at all the tech hubs like MIT and Stanford, as well as at all of the smaller schools. Enthusiasm for learning to code is at an all-time high, and computer science enrollments at some school is far surpassing the numbers that were seen during the late 1980s during the tech boom. So this is, you know, the good times have returned for IT. Now, the recent dramatic growth in computer science may well continue for a long time. And many do not believe it's going to be a bubble like we experienced in the tech boom of the late 90s where we had the big bust. Because they think this is a more broad-based expansion and just not fueled by this bubble of internet stocks that were going on. So they think this is a long-term shift in the integration of software into businesses, and this demand for computer science is going to continue for a good long while. So that is an excellent choice, Doug, if you like it. So just try some coding out. If you really enjoy it, then give it a shot.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. It's Saturday morning, and we're on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2. Stand by. More Tech Talk coming up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tysons Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
You better get
Welcome
back on
there. Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge of Stratford University, and now it is time for...
Whoa. Wait a minute. Come on now.
There we go.
Mr. Big Voice was out roaming the halls again. There he is.
We're going to have to keep Mr. Big Voice chained to the desk here. Uh-huh. Well, today we're going to be talking about John T. Draper, otherwise known as Captain Crunch, a former phone freak.
I'm hungry.
Now, he was named after the Captain Crunch mascot. After Captain Crunch, which is the mascot of a cereal guy. You remember Captain Crunch cereal? I remember that.
Of course I do.
Yeah.
How could forget?
Now, Draper was born in 1944, the son of a U.S. Air Force engineer. Draper himself entered the Air Force in 1964, and while stationed in Alaska, he helped his fellow servicemen make free phone calls home by devising an access method to the local telephone switchboard. Despite that, he was honorably discharged from the Air Force in 1968 and did military-related work for several employers in the San Francisco Bay Area. He was sort of the ultimate counterculture guy. He operated a pirate radio station out of a Volkswagen van for a while. Now, John Draper had a friend named Joe Engracia, who was later known as Joy Bubbles, as his handle on the internet. And Joe, or Joy Bubbles, was blind, and he and several of his blind friends had perfect pitch. And they would sit around, and they could whistle their way through the phone system. And Joe invited John Draper to come to one of their... One of their whistling meets when they were going around the, breaking into the phone system. So John Draper went to visit his friend Joe. He arrived there, opened up the door. The entire house was dark. And Joe said, well, all my friends are blind. We don't need any lights.
So they turned on the lights for John, and they demonstrated their method. And it turned out that Joe, or Joy Bubbles, had perfect pitch. He, in fact, could whistle the exact frequency that was required to control the AT&T long lines, which is 2600 hertz.
Uh-huh.
And so he learned how to do that. Now, it also turned out that at the same time, Captain Crunch's bosun whistle was given as a free toy in Captain Crunch. And the Captain Crunch bosun whistle was exactly tuned to 2600 hertz. Could I hear that bosun whistle?
Yeah, we can hear that. You know, if you're listening at home, you might want to cover your ears.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's 2600 hertz. Whoa, that
you
is
know what? That had an unexpected, an unintended effect.
Yeah.
Look outside the window.
Oh, there's a police car. There's a police car over there too.
We need to get him away from that tree.
Yeah,
it's the David Byrd tree.
Yeah. Well, the Captain Crunch bosun whistle was released in 1971. Now, it turned out this 2600 tone was very interesting. Whenever a long line, an AT&T long line was idle, There had to be a tone that indicated that the line was available but idle, and they would run a 2600 hertz signal on an idle line indicating that it could be picked up.
Why did you make me do that? My ears are still ringing.
No, so what they discovered is that they could make a toll-free phone call, and they could then whistle the 2600 pitch, and the other end would release the phone line thinking that it was idle, and then they could do whatever they would want, and they could whistle their way around the world. So it turned out that Draper, of course, loved this idea. He could not whistle the 2600 pitch like his friend Joy Bubbles could.
That sounds much better.
He couldn't whistle it, so he started initially using the Captain Crunch bosun whistle. But later on, he developed the famous Blue Box.
Ah.
Because the Blue Box had the 2600 tone, but then if you want to start whistling around and go from switch to switch, you had to have other tones at different times. So he had a Blue Box that had all the tones that were needed to walk through the system.
You know, Captain Crunch needed to come up with a bunch of different bosun whistles. That way, you know... It would keep the kids buying the cereal because you'd get a new whistle every week.
That's exactly right. Well, you know, Captain Crunch was really riding high back in 71. He was like king of the heap. And
1972 sort of changed things.
72 changed the thing. You know, hackers, even, you know, 2600 has become infamous with hackers. That's sort of the beginning of the whole hacker community. There's the Hacker Quarterly, which is named 2600, because it comes from the 2600 hertz used to freak the phone system. Well, in 1971, an Esquire magazine article came out about John T. Draper and Captain Crunch and all of it, and it explained exactly how he did it. And that's when he got in trouble. AT&T said, look, now everybody's doing it, just not a few high techies. And all people are now, they got plans to build the Blue Box. Everybody was getting a Blue Box. So in 1972, Draper was arrested for toll fraud charges and sentenced to 5 years probation. Now,
got off easy.
Now, he forced the phone companies to invest a lot of money because back then they were using what they call in-band switch control, where in the communication band or the audio band, they would use these tones to control the switches.
Mm-hmm.
They had to, and that was the so-called signaling system 5, SS5. They had to go to an out-of-band signaling system. So in 1977, they went to SS6. 1980, they went to SS7, signaling system 7, which is an out-of-band way to control the switches, so you couldn't use the tones to control it. And they spent billions to try to circumvent the techniques that Captain Crunch had been developed. Now, it turns out that this Esquire article brought him to the attention of Steve Wozniak, of course, was the co-founder of Apple. He was the guy that actually built the first Apple. They called him the Woz. Well, the Woz was really interested in the phone freak. So while the Woz was in college, he sent a letter to Draper and invited him to come to school and make a talk. And they treated him like a visiting god. And I watched a video of Woz talking about this thing. And he said they had him come out and they went out to a payphone and they were going to use the Blue Box. And while they were gathered in the payphone working with the Blue Box, a police car rolled up. And so Woz said they were all trying to put this Blue Box around there, putting it in their pocket. The policeman thought they were doing some kind of drug deal there. So then he saw the Blue Box. He says, well, what is the Blue Box? He says, well, this is my keyboard synthesizer for making music. And so the policeman was trying to play songs with it. He says, you know, he says, you're going to have to go back. He says, this is just not going to work as a synthesizer. He didn't even know what a Blue Box was.
He didn't know what it was.
So,
well, it's a good thing.
So that's Steve Wozniak almost got arrested with Captain Crunch. Later on, Draper wrote Easy Rider, which was the first word processor for Apple II. That was in 79. Then he ported Easy Rider to an IBM PC, and he beat Bill Gates to the IBM word processor contract. And actually, Draper started a company called Captain Software. He should have come up with Microsoft. He over 6 years, he got less than $1 million in revenue. It wasn't exactly that successful. In the 80s, Draper worked for Autodesk but was laid off. He currently writes computer software and hosts Crunch TV on the Internet. He's portrayed in a movie on Pirates of Silicon Valley. He inspired Kevin Mitnick, who was the first well-known computer hacker, because as soon as people started phone freaking, and then they hooked computers to the phone system, and then Kevin Mitnick said, well, why don't we do that? And so there we go. John T. Draper, a man who is infamous in the beginning of the hacking movement.
Well, so we profile people who've had positive impact on technology and those who are just ne'er-do-wells, and I'd say Captain Crunch. So anyway, okay, Captain Crunch. Crunchberries, good or bad, Naveed?
Crunchberries were awesome.
Yeah. Do you remember that? Didn't they also have peanut butter Captain Crunch for a while?
They did. The ones that I liked better were not Captain Crunch, but the Boo Berries.
Oh.
Those were great.
Yeah, that's a totally different cereal. I think
it is.
That was in the Count Chocula family.
Did you ever have a Captain Crunch Bosun whistle?
I did not.
I think I did.
I was unfortunate. I didn't have one of those.
I think I did.
I went on eBay last night to see if I could get one on eBay. There are none available on eBay. They are in high demand. These are like major collector items now.
Wow,
the Captain Crunch Bosun whistle.
It's Saturday morning, and you're listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. Stand by. More of Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn by doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University, changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now it's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. Nope, it's not Monty Hall. It's not Epic Band. It's not Dr. Richard Church. It's this guy right here. And I would be that aforementioned guy right here. My name is Jim Ross. I'm the adjunct professor for lowering academic standards at Stratford University. We just talked about John T. Draper, one of the original computer hackers. In his early exploits, he used this item found in a box of cereal. If you can tell me what that item is, You win tickets for two, fine dining at the Escoffier at Stratford University on the campus in Falls Church, or at the Cafe Karim at the campus in Woodbridge. To get the answer to us, you need to pick up the phone and call us right now. If you're calling from east of Juneau, Alaska, it's 877-936-9333. Calling from west of San Francisco, California, it's 877-936-9333. And everybody else can use the wild card line. That's 877-936-9333. The Pop Quiz on Tech Talk Radio.
The website of the week, Corked D. You know, dude, you drink much wine, Jim?
No, I don't.
You don't drink much wine?
No, only when I'm putting together a computer. Like, you know, I know that's how you do it, right?
Yeah, you're not going to be... you're not probably going to enjoy this particular website. Well, CorkD, CorkD.com.
I do like it. I just don't drink a lot of it. I can't. I'm not supposed to.
You know, one of the problems with wine, you know, you go down to the wine store to look around for wine, and, you know, the bottles all look the same, and you try to talk to the guy down there, and you just get some wine double talk.
Yeah. That's how I buy wine. When I'm buying wine for somebody, it's what the label looks like. That's what I do.
That's right. So you come back with like Barefoot in the Park or something.
Or something in a box.
Yeah, something in a box. That's right. Well, you know, box wines actually are innovative in that they don't oxidize because the bag shrinks around the wine. So the last glass of box wine is as good as the first glass. Now
the problem is the first glass isn't that good to begin with.
Now that is the problem, but it doesn't get worse. It just starts bad. But this corked website, CORKD, is a very nice website. It's a way to rate wines, and so you log on. It's like one of these. You create a username, and then you can create a wine journal where this is where you rate and review the wines that you've tried. And you can look at what other people have rated their wines. You've got a wine cellar where you can list the wines that you would like to own but haven't tried yet. You can have a shopping list of this is where you keep track of the wines you'd like to buy. Your contact list you call Drinking Buddies. You can add other Cork members on as Drinking Buddies so that each time they review a new wine, you're alerted to your drinking buddy's taste. And then you can, of course, make recommendations, and then all your drinking buddies then are alerted to your recommendations. This is actually pretty nice.
It's a very cool idea.
It's a great idea. I was looking around there, and you'll run across somebody's preference on a particular wine, and it is probably a recommendation you're not going to find anywhere else. It's just a great way to get people collaborating and talking about wine. It's a very, very good idea. That's CorkD, CORKD.com. It's actually a free website, and it was kind of fun to look around. So, I kind of enjoyed that.
So, Doc, what would be on your recommendation list?
I'm guessing the Doc would like the Falling Star Sauvignon Blanc Semillon. Right?
No,
there's a lot of aunts in there.
I have to tell you, I'm kind of partial to $3 Chuck.
$3 Chuck. I'm not familiar with his work. Although I think after one glass, I probably would be.
Yeah,
how about Guinness? No, that's not a wine. You can't put that in.
How about
Ernest and Julio Gallo?
Oh. Uh-huh.
Bartles and James? No. Okay.
Bartles and James, yes.
So that is the website of the week.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, heard in the Washington area, over the broadcast airwaves on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2, on the Internet worldwide at techtalkonline.com. More of Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the
classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu. Or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Law agencies arrested the Black Shades cyber gang. Now, international law agencies have arrested the cyber gang that deployed malicious code that can turn on your webcam, listen to your microphone, and steal your information.
Wow.
Now, the gang is using a RAT.
What?
Now, that stands for Remote Access Trojan. Remote Access Trojan. So they are remotely accessing your computer with this software device, which is called a Trojan. They gain access to your computer, and it allows them to remotely monitor a large number of individuals for various extortion purposes. Black Shades RAT is, they call it dual-use technology, in that it hypothetically could be used for legitimate purposes, like accessing your home network.
I was going to say it makes it sound non-nefarious that
way.
Yeah,
so right? you could put this RAT on your computer, then you could access your webcam from work, and you could see what's going on at home. So you could actually use it for legitimate purposes, mm-hmm. but then you could also use it for non-legitimate purposes, and that's what the criminals are using it for. In this instance, Black Shades RAT was available originally on bshades.eu. You could download it, but the FBI shut down bshades.edu some time ago. And that's been associated with a widespread campaign that's infected hundreds of thousands of computers. This is the same RAT that was infamously used to spy on Miss Teen USA. Remember, they were going to.
Yes.
They were.
Right.
The guy was threatening to reveal pictures of her in partial undress because she didn't realize that the RAT was on. And
right.
It was just on in her room, and he was taking pictures. Now, the Black Shades RAT cost between $50 and $100, and one of the authors, Michael Hoag, was arrested some time ago, but it still continues to be distributed on the web because it's available, it works, and so there are different sites that are, different people are sharing it through email. The particular gang combined Black Shades. What they did, this particular gang that was arrested, they combined Black Shades with drive-by downloads, which enabled seamless and silent installation. So you would go to a particular website, and unknown to you, that website would just download Black Shades to your computer, and you wouldn't even know it. Now, that download would occur if you weren't running up-to-date security software and had not patched your computer. If you're running outdated stuff, they were using some more recent security holes in the system so they could just get right into your system. Now, there were a large number of law enforcement agencies involved in the operation, and they actually made over 90 arrests from countries all over the world and in Europe. Now, in order to keep rats off your computer, remote access Trojans off your computer, keep your computer fully patched and up to date, particularly when operating, particularly your operating system, and be particularly mindful of your browser plugins like Java and Flash. Always, always, always keep them up to date because Java and Flash are frequent targets for these vulnerabilities. Run up-to-date endpoint security software that will detect a large number of rats in the wild. So you know, I use Sophos. There are many other antivirus software that you have on your computer, and it scans stuff. So if it scans websites, anything tries to come down to you, it will automatically detect it. And plan for the worst. Assume that somebody is going to get into your computer. Don't keep a file called passwords.xls.
Right.
With your sensitive information in the documents folder. You'd be surprised how many people do that, because if there's a rat on your machine, they're going to be able to see all your files. Now, you could also black out your webcam with a sticker. Now, the number of there are some stylish stickers that are available we can use to cover your webcam. Now, also keep an eye out for strange behavior. Now, rats don't have to interact with the computer screen directly, but sometimes they do. And it's quite common for you to see the mouse move, like somebody else is moving the mouse.
Yeah, sure.
And actually, they are. So, you know, if somebody's, like, on your computer trying to play around with you, they could actually be logged onto your computer, and they could be moving the mouse. So if you see anything weird like that, you've got a rat. And use web security. This, this just is not, it's just not adult sites that infect your system with malware. Malicious code can be located anywhere on the web, and it might hit you when you least expect it, even from a legitimate site. Network-based web security can identify web pages that contain nasty code and prevent you from browsing them. So that's what, you know, I've got software that actually scans any web pages. If it's a malicious web page that's trying to do something, stops it right away. So if you try, if you use these various combinations of techniques, you will keep rats off of your computer.
Good advice. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. It's Saturday morning on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2. Tech Talk Radio, heard here and also online at techtalkonline.com. Stand by. More of Tech Talk coming up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn by doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology, and the NSA has been intercepting and bugging Cisco routers.
Wow.
Glenn Walden's book, No Place to Hide, has included more of the Snowden leaks. One photo shows an NSA team intercepting and bugging a Cisco router before it's sent to a customer who's been targeted for surveillance. In the document, an internal newsletter from June 2010, the chief of the NSA's Access and Target Development Department explains the process of intercepting routers, servers, and other internet hardware to install beacon implants, and then resealing them and sending them onto the target. Here's how it works. A shipment of computer network devices, servers, routers, etc., being delivered to our target throughout the world are intercepted. They're redirected to a secret location where the tailored access operations employees, with the support of the remote operations center, enable the installation of beacon implants directly into our target's electronic devices. These devices are then repackaged and placed back into transit to the original destination. All this happens with the support of the intelligence community partners and the technical wizards at DAO. It's not clear how often the agency has used this technique, but the document has prompted a response from Cisco. According to Mark Chandler, the company's SVP, Senior Vice President and General Counsel and Security, he basically says that Cisco has never cooperated with the government's efforts to weaken products. And Cisco is not very happy about that.
I'll bet.
Now, Google gets to decide who gets forgotten. If you remember, Google recently had to respond to a court case that was conducted in the European Court of Justice, ECJ. And they had a right-to-be-forgotten ruling that said individuals have the right to be forgotten if something, if they'd like something forgotten. So Google has announced that they are now accepting requests from Europeans to take down links to unflattering and potentially damaging reports or content. Now, what lies ahead is an ethical and legal complex situation. And it's very contentious as to what should be removed to protect privacy and what should stay to protect the public interest. Like, you know, let's just say a simple, like say if somebody was a sexual predator, he might say, I want this removed because I can't get a job. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, public interest might say, well, that should be posted to protect your neighbors. So you have to balance public interest against the desire for privacy. And the European Court of Justice is leaving that decision in Google's hands. So they're the judge and the jury in this case. So ECJ has made Google in charge of this decision. Now, Google decided to do all of Europe, but just for good measure, they threw in Iceland and Liechtenstein for good measure. Now, to help navigate these waters, because these are really moral issues, Google announced a 7-person advisory committee. It's headed by Eric Schmidt. I'm thinking Eric's not going to attend these meetings.
No.
That also included Wikipedia's Jimmy Wales. That was a good choice. And a number of privacy and free speech experts. It also included Luciano Floridi, who's an information ethics philosopher. Have you ever heard of an information ethics philosopher? He's an information ethics philosopher at the Oxford Internet Institute. He's grounded in the traditions of Aristotle and Plato. So they'll have this committee, and they'll decide whether they're going to agree with it or not. Probably that committee of seven are going to develop some standardized rules and standards that will be implemented by others. I can't believe that they're going to look at every single request.
No.
But they'll develop a protocol. And then they'll only look at the really tough cases. Now, this is the interesting thing. Links that are blocked in Europe are still available in North America.
Huh.
Because because North America doesn't have that rule. So somebody in, Europe that wants to get the dirt on someone could simply set up a VPN with that's located in the U.S., and everything would be there. So unless you can censor the world, it doesn't really seem like this is going to be that effective, because people who want to get the dirt are going to get the dirt on
right.
you, and they're going to use a VPN that doesn't have any censoring. Now, what is interesting that when Google blocks somebody, it just doesn't disappear. They actually put up a link, and they say this link has been expunged according to a European court ruling. So everybody knows that something's missing.
Mm-hmm.
So they know that something's missing, so then they're going to just fire up the VPN, go to the U.S. server, and bingo, take a look at it. So I don't think this is going to achieve much, but Google is doing their best to try to conform. By the way, Google used similar notices in China when content had been censored by authorities. So they're making Europe look a lot like communist China in this process. So I think that was kind of an intentional view there. Cybercrime laws are used to target security researchers. Some of the best-known security researchers claim that they've been threatened with an indictment over their efforts to find vulnerabilities in the internet infrastructure. Many in the security industry have expressed grave concern around the application of the U.S. Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, CFAA. Complaining that law enforcement officers and lawyers have used it against anyone looking for vulnerabilities in the internet and have criminalized work that's largely benign. They've also argued that the law carries overly severe punishments, is too vague, and does not consider context, only the action. H.D. Moore, the creator of the ethical hacking tool Metasploit, and chief research officer of the security consultancy Rapid 7 told The Guardian that he had been warned by U.S. law enforcement last year over a scanning project called Critical.io, which he started in 2012. The initiative thought to find widespread vulnerabilities using automated computer programs to uncover weaknesses around the entire Internet. The project that landed Moore in trouble, Critical.io, uncovered some serious widespread vulnerabilities, including one case where between 40 and 50 million network machines could have been compromised due to weaknesses in a network protocol known as universal plug and play. That's why they recommend that you disable universal plug and play in many cases if you don't need it. Yet law enforcement continued to pursue Moore, even though he was transparent in his role and the reasons for the scanning. The law doesn't encourage experts with skill to investigate threats. Moore said actions by law enforcement were partly responsible for him taking a break from the industry to which he's just returned. But his biggest fears surround the overall effect on Internet security. You need people who can get into the details of these systems, people who know how to manipulate the technology to get their advantage over the criminals in the world, he added. Many other researchers are believed to have had similar issues. Zach Lanier, a senior security researcher at Duo Security, said many of his team had run into possible CFAA issues before in the course of their research over the past decade. We warned of a vulnerability, but then after we warned a company that they were vulnerable, they claimed that we had hacked their systems. Lanier said after finding severe vulnerabilities in an unnamed embedded device marketed toward children and reporting them to the manufacturer, he received calls from lawyers threatening him with action. The threat of CFAA prosecution forced Lanier and his team to walk away from the research. I think the enforcement of CFAA should be rethought, and we should find a way to allow these guys to do their research on Internet vulnerabilities.
You always hear about air traffic controllers and how the air traffic controllers are basically causing a traffic jam in the sky. Well, the interesting thing about air traffic controllers, we're basically using World War II technology.
Mm-hmm.
They're using radar.
Right.
To track the planes, just the same way Britain tracked the incoming planes from Germany by radar. Now, cars all have GPS systems.
I was going to say, we're much more technically advanced on the ground.
I mean, my son's got a GPS system on his racing bike.
I saw this thing in a couple of days ago in a catalog, GPS for dogs, to track your hunting dogs.
Good Lord.
And it'll tell you whether they're sitting, standing, or moving.
So what we have now in the air traffic control system is a system that really can't grow. Robert Sturgill, FAA's deputy administrator, told the Senate committee last month that the current system cannot handle the projected traffic demands expected by 2015. What is actually happening now, it takes, about 36 seconds to get a fix on an airplane with radar. Now, at 500 miles an hour, that means a plane has traveled 5 miles
right
before you locate them. So in order to keep the planes from running into each other, they're separated horizontally by 5 miles
mm-hmm.
and vertically by 3 miles. Now, the pilots don't have any information about planes around them. All the data goes back to the traffic controller, who looks at this radar screen, and he says, Pilot A, would you move up a little bit? Pilot B, move down a little bit. And everybody is just following these guidance. Now, there's a new system out there that they're trying to implement, the next generation system for air traffic control, which uses GPS. It's a real simple idea. Every plane has GPS. It gets their GPS coordinates. It transmits to the control tower, as well as to all the aircraft in the area, its flight number, the flight information, as well as its location. Every airplane has an air traffic control display on it, and you can see all the other airplanes in the area. Guess what? You can do your own traffic control. You can do your own guidance. You can do your own spacing, and you can get the planes closer together, and you don't have to have this centralized system that we have now. That's a so-called ADS. B, it's called the Automatic Dependent Surveillance Broadcast System. And FAA is trying to get funding for this thing to get to get going. And, you know, as FAA is wont to do, they're a little bit slow getting off the stick here, and so people are criticizing them. Some of the airplanes are installing it on their own. They're just not waiting for the FAA. Mm-hmm. For instance, UPS Airlines, which, you know, they cargo carriers, they have already equipped 300 of their planes with this ADS-B technology. They're expecting that they can save almost 800,000 gallons in fuel annually because they'll be able to have more efficient approach pads.
And that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. It's going to pay for itself. Southwest is going to install a similar system next year. They're expecting to save a lot of money. We all want FAA to get off the stick. I think the airlines could pay for it. The skies could be a lot safer.
Safer and to keep flight costs down and maybe bring down some ticket prices.
That's right. Did you ever wonder how GPS worked?
Absolutely.
Well, it turns out GPS stands for Global Positioning System. It's a worldwide navigation system which is formed from a constellation of 24 satellites and 5 ground stations. Now, these 24 satellites are actually operating at an orbit which is at a 55-degree angle from the equator, so that they cross over the North American hemisphere. These 24 satellites are called Navstar. They were made by Rockwell International. Each satellite weighs 1,900 pounds.
Navstar is also my vanity plate.
Really?
Wow.
Oh, Navstar.
You're cool, man. You're really cool.
You know, I never thought of that.
I bet the chicks really dig that, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 17 feet with the solar panels extended.
Wow. Mr. Navstar over there.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
They have an orbital period of 12 hours. And they have a lifespan of 7.5 years. I'm trying to move on as fast
as okay.
I can.
Yeah, okay, I'll knock it off. I'm sorry.
they have ground stations in Hawaii, Ascension Islands, Diego Garcia, Kwajalein, I don't know how you pronounce that, and Colorado Springs.
Sounds good to me.
Now, what they do, you need 3 satellites to triangulate to get your position.
Triangulation.
Triangulation to get your position. And so, but then if you want to triangulate, you have to have the exact time, which means you need an atomic clock in your receiver, which is very expensive.
He needs some water. Would you get him?
I think he's been...
Coffee. I got coffee.
Been, that's the problem. Right. I think we've found the problem. Take the coffee away.
That's right. And so the time is a problem because you need a very expensive receiver to have accurate time. Well, they discovered if you have a 4th satellite, mm-hmm. you can derive the time from it. So if you use 4 satellites...
4 satellites? What happens to the triangulation?
It's a quadrangulation.
Okay.
Then.
Wow.
See, it's spatially triangulated. And so with the 4th satellite, you can derive the time, and that allows you to have an ultra-cheap GPS sensor without, and it gets the time from the satellites. So if you ever are in your car, you notice it takes a while for the GPS to turn on, you've got to lock in on 4 satellites. Once you lock in on 4 satellites out of the 24... Normally, 9 are in the horizon. When I've tracked them, I've seen up to 8. Because I have a little system that tracks the GPS satellites. And I've seen up to 8 or 9 at one time. Mm-hmm. But you only need 4 to really do it. So there's all you wanted to know about. Probably more than you wanted to
probably
know.
Probably more than you wanted to
know about GPS.
We're running a little short, so we're going to take a final break. Dr. Schertz, Jim Russ, and Navstar. We'll be right back after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Master's in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria.
Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Master's in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tysons Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. CloudPress. This was born in the Egyptian Revolution. The three founders of CloudPress, Alan Chen, El Zohairi, and Bobby Matthews, started the company in Egypt in early 2013, and they were incubated by Flat 6 Labs, one of the few tech accelerators in the Middle East and the only one in Cairo. It's a cloud platform designed to easily create and share visual content, in particular visual storybooks, recipes, how-to guides, buying guides, similar kind of content. Users achieve this simply by dragging and dropping their content into the platform, and then they rearrange the images, rearrange the text, rearrange the videos without any coding being necessary. They can pull imagery and content from Pinterest, Facebook, Twitter, embed, or even their email account. Published content is then immediately available online and can be distributed throughout social media and email channels. It's optimized for touch and mobile. Chen, El Zohairi, and Matthews met at the University of Washington in Seattle while doing their undergraduate degrees in computer science. El Zohairi was a University of Washington graduate student, and then he worked for Adobe Systems with Adobe InDesign team in Seattle and for the mobile and web startup in Egypt and for different mobile and web startups in Egypt and Canada. As a student, he was selected for one of only five scholarships given to Egyptian students to study in the U.S. Chen is a University of Washington graduate with 5+ years experience as a software engineer at Amazon.com. He led the design and implementation of many of the front-end libraries that Amazon is built on. Matthews is a University of Washington graduate with 4+ years experience as a software engineer at Amazon.com, and he developed various front-end and back-end components. While El Zohairi was in grad school in Canada, the Egyptian Revolution started. He decided to get involved, and he ended up in Cairo during the uprising and the revolution that tore through the country. And he tried to apply his skills as a technologist to help. So he was trying to find ways so people could share information as a way to help it. After he went back to Egypt, El Zohairi and Chen, who was in Seattle, started working together on a side project to create a platform for independent authors who wanted to publish children books on multiple tablet platforms. By the end of 2012, they applied to Flat Labs, and Matthews joined them. This month, get this, they sold their startup to News Corp for an undisclosed amount. News Corp plans to use the platform to create, deliver, and sell great content.
That's all we have time for this week. Hope you join us next week here on Tech Talk Radio, heard every Saturday at 9 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, online at techtalkonline.com, and on federalnewsradio.com. And, of course, learn everything you ever wanted to know about Stratford University by going to their website, stratford.edu. See you next week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and Federal News Radio. This page.